Where are all my friends? Bernice Chow. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. This is such a cool setup. Thanks for showing me it.
You walked in and you're like, oh my God, I have to take a picture. And I am like always a little self-conscious of it because I'm like, is it my house? Like, I hope it's, you know, like I'm always like, it's not a studio. So I felt so validated when you're like, this is so cool.
Oh yeah. I was definitely checking out all the tech. I was like, where'd you get this? Where'd you buy it? So no, thank you. This is amazing.
And I think like already just in talking to you, I have like two kinds of episodes where it's either somebody I've known forever and it's like, all right, let's share this, this, and this. And I love it. Or it's making new friends. And I love both for so many different reasons. But I've really, as the podcast has grown, have really fallen in love with making new friends and hearing new stories. And I've already learned that you have started a podcast and I get really excited to share knowledge with other podcasters and to grow together. I feel like it's a really cool community. So when you saw the setup, I was like, yeah, try this. And then you have these mics and then this, and you can get this. So I'm so excited that you have a podcast as well.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's nice to learn from an expert.
Yeah, I don't know about expert, but strong enthusiast. So on my side, it's the craziest, like positive side of I love the internet, where a friend forwarded me a newsletter, an article, and I typically don't read those, but I just skimmed it and I saw something, a clip. It had to have been out of Visibility Mindset or something, but I just thought it was really beautiful. Like, I really liked the way you wrote and I really liked your mindset towards advertising. And I say I like lightly study advertising. Like, I'm a big Seth Godin fan. I'm always trying to read certain books and things like that. So I saw it and I was just like, this is cool. And every so often I'll see something like that and I'll just be inspired and I'll be like, I'm going to send him a DM or I'll just reach out. And I did that. And I was just like, I wasn't sure. I thought you were in LA, but I was just like, hey, I really liked what you had to say. Just found you. Let me know if you'd ever want to do a podcast. And you hit me back and you're like, yeah, that's sick. So shouts to the internet doing the most magical side of the internet and bringing people together. It's really cool.
I love that. I was on my Instagram and it was in my DMs and I was like checking out the content and I just thought it was really cool. For people that are listening, I saw that your work at South by last year for the Porsche hashtag Unseen.
Yeah.
And I attended it.
So crazy.
And I was like, oh, so this, I actually already know this person. So I was like, instantly felt like, oh, I have a very symbiotic connection. So
yes.
Thanks for reaching out.
Oh my God. It's so cool. And like that moment, like learning that you were there, like that's so cool. And I don't know what it is, but there's just certain ways that the universe brings like-minded people together. I've really loved the exercise of making that world a little smaller with the podcast and sharing these stories. So with all of that said, for a listener who doesn't know, a quick explanation of who you are and what you do, and then we'll dig in.
Absolutely. So I'm Bernice Chow. I'm from Bay Area, so Cupertino, California. For those with an Apple phone, it's where they're from.
Yep.
I grew up really in Silicon Valley during the tech crunch. It's going to make me sound really old right now, but I had the first color computer that Apple made.
Whoa, the clear ones that
it was like a white box kind of setup.
Oh,
it had
okay.
The colored rainbow Apple on the corner. It was the Mac 2GS.
Crazy.
And I remember just really loving it. What a computer meant, the fact that you can design on it. Back then it was pretty pixels, pretty lo-fi. I think it was Paint. But I just loved the idea of like, I loved art. I loved art. I loved doodling, drawing, and my parents were luckily very supportive of that hobby. And then the tech side of it. So when the internet came around, I was like designing websites. I was curating content, the things that I really liked. It was like a blog thing where I just kind of had my favorite things on a page. But it's just really neat, the idea of sharing information and kind of collecting it in a place where everyone could see. And I was so fortunate that I was able to find someone that kind of did what I'm doing now. And that was, this was my sister's boyfriend in high school's sister.
Okay.
And my sister being 10 years older than me and that sister being older than that person, it jumped me 15 years ahead of time.
Right.
Where I could see what a career in art looked like.
Oh, because, cool. That's valuable.
Yes. Because I didn't have that. I didn't know anyone personally that was in advertising or in a creative path. So I didn't know my hobby could be an actual career.
That's such an important moment, isn't it? Like, for to realize that the thing you love can be the thing you can do. A lot of people don't realize that.
And that's why mentorship and representation is so incredibly valuable. Yeah. We were talking ahead of this, like before this session, about how a lot of the work I do is really talking to people about, hey, there is a job out there that could be what you already love to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be two different things. It doesn't have to be two sides of your life. You can be one career.
Yeah. So that was your first example of seeing that.
Yes. I saw a woman boss
who
was the breadwinner, who had two kids, who had a creative job.
So
and
sick.
So I was, you know, the internet was really fresh then. And so I was just like, okay, where'd you go to school? What did you study?
You just reverse engineered what she did.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. So smart.
So I moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I went to Art Center, College of Design, did an art degree, which is very scary to my East Asian parents.
Yeah.
And I was able to get into a job in advertising.
Wow.
I had a housewarming party at my house and my friend brought a friend that worked for one of the largest agencies in Los Angeles, TBWA Chiat Day.
Whoa, like a big proper agency.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And at this time I was studying art, like graphic design. I didn't study advertising.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really know what that was still.
Yeah.
And luckily this person, through sheer luck of networking, I was able to get my job and get my foot in the door.
Wow.
So the other advice I always give is don't be afraid to network. And 70% of those jobs aren't even posted online.
Yeah. Wow.
So
that's, I believe that stat.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So that's so much lost opportunities if you don't go out there and really say what you need or say what you want.
Yeah. Wow. Well, okay. I love this moment in your life though, because you said it so casually, but it's actually really cool. So you're a young artist and you go to school and you study art. And then you kind of put together that can live with advertising, but you weren't familiar with the career of advertising. What kind of art were you studying? What were you thinking? Like, what was your mindset then? And then what did advertising look like at that time? Because I would love to, I'm asking, I want to learn. I want to know.
No, definitely. So my art was graphic design.
Uh-huh.
I really liked, I guess, title graphics. I really like kind of just things that look nice,
mm-hmm.
right? I had a very like, okay, this is what a nicely interior decorated room looks like. This is what a really interesting typographic typeface looked like. I had a very sensibility for that.
Yeah.
But then I didn't really know what advertising was. Like I never really thought of commercials as graphic design. I kind of thought of it more as film.
Okay.
And so I was doing my internships. Highly recommend everyone to do internships just to see what different careers are like or even talk to those people in those careers.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sound like a totally nerded out, but when I shy day, I got put on PlayStation.
Oh, cool.
And I was very big gamer.
Oh,
if I had more time,
cool.
I would still be a really big gamer.
Oh, very cool.
And this is the start of YouTube at this time. Oh, so laying the foundation of where this was. And
which was it PlayStation? Which generation?
It was three.
PS3.
It was PS3.
Wow.
It was the White Room campaign. It was kind of this really surreal, like what's happening in the White Room. The White Room really represented kind of the world of imagination and technology in this room.
What a crazy project to work on in time.
When I walked into the room and they're like, we want to bring you in and your project was PlayStation, I had a tear. I was like, this is the dream.
Yeah.
I was playing video games and I was working on campaigns for every single one of them. And they would be like these quick cycles. So I had like 3 months with a video game, then go to the next and the next. And each one was so uniquely different.
Oh, that's so sick. So, because like growing up, like that's it. Like when you get home from school, you get to play like PlayStation. Like it was PS1 and PS2 for me. Like,
and so you watch the commercials and you're like, I can't wait for this to come out.
Yes. So for you, then like you have this moment where you learn graphic design. You're this artist in your head and you just notice good art and aesthetics.
Yes.
And then you're learning that this can be applied and that it's a valuable skill. And then you're getting to apply that instantly to freaking PlayStation.
One of the first projects I worked on was for God of War.
Okay.
And it's a game with mythical gods and they all have different like characteristics and it's like kind of an adventure game.
That was a pretty popular game, right? That was
it was a big series.
Yeah.
The idea was like, how do you make people enjoy this game outside of the game?
Mm.
And the idea that the team had was to get a bunch of LARPers. And these are people who have like
live action
swords, live
play,
action role playing to dress them up like the characters. And you can select them in this digital web space. So you could pick like Zeus versus Medusa. And we film all these different combinations. And then you see them kind of like throw their lightning bolts or, you know, kind of do their things and you can see who wins.
Wow.
Very simple.
Yeah.
But it's such a fun shoot.
Wow.
And then we had this other one for SOCOM Hell Week,
mm-hmm.
where we had the actual gamers do the Navy SEAL training.
No way.
And like usually the gamers aren't the ones training.
Yeah.
And so it was really fun and entertaining with one person winning.
Right.
But this was such great content of early YouTube. And I feel like yeah. in the world of advertising, we're getting back to the content we enjoy.
Whoa.
Instead of pushing product, it's about really, you know, enjoying the story and enjoying yeah. like how you can like express it.
I keep coming back to the word authenticity lately. Yes. Like it really feels like it has to go back to that. Like you can't game numbers, just chunks of followings and analytics don't really matter to people anymore. Yeah. It's just like this feeling of like, is it fun? Do you care? Do other people attach to it?
Exactly.
But you had that then. That's what that was in early YouTube.
Yep.
Wow. What were like your like KPIs to that? Like what was a successful campaign? Like when you go and bring it back and say, all right, cool, we made God of War. Like, were people stoked?
So another campaign I worked on was for this adventure game. It's called Uncharted.
Oh, you worked on some huge games.
Yeah. And I think this is the time where if you had devout followers, they will follow the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did these things where we hid clues all over the internet. Like you had to go to Craigslist and you had to go to one of our banners. You had to like go to our website and find these little Easter eggs everywhere.
Yeah.
And a little part of me was like, are people really gonna do this?
Yeah.
And they did.
Wow.
And I feel like that for me, knowing that people actually went in and noticed the details.
Yeah.
And followed the journey and then talked about it online. That for me is a huge success. Yeah, you can wait for the award shows to recognize you or the press releases to recognize you. But when you get people in the comments, like real everyday people with those authentic comments saying, this was amazing. I love the ride. Like that's the stuff that I feel like really brings value to someone that's creative.
As a creative who's like I think that that should be rewarded. I think that's the only thing that should be paid attention to. But working at such a huge agency,
That one was Shy Day, TV Shy Day.
Was that recognized? Like, was that appreciated? Was that, okay, sick.
Yeah,
sick.
I had an amazing team.
Yeah.
Really talented people that were also like in the gaming space.
Yeah.
And it was fun. Like we worked hard, but we like celebrated together. We worked hard. We would work late, but it was always like, we love the work.
Ugh, I love that.
My old creative director that managed me, he's now at Blizzard.
Wow.
And so it's kind of like, and I still like connect with him from time to time. And I just felt like it was just such fun projects.
That's incredible. And was that like your first real professional job out of college? Oh my God.
Very blessed.
Yeah. Now, if you look back at it, if there was somebody just like a you that was really creative and took that little less traditional path and did the art side and they're interested, they're like, must be nice. I wish I could get a job like that. Do you think like there's advice there? Can you like kind of find what really unlocked that if you look back now?
Well, at that time, I didn't realize networking was important. I didn't go to the intention of meeting those people to network. I just lucked out 100%. But if I knew how important it was earlier, because a little bit of me was, I grew up with this Chinese saying called 不好意思. And that means almost like be courteous. Like don't be rude. And so if I met you and I was like, oh my gosh, Andrew's amazing. Look at his podcast. I would be over here in awe and not reach out to you.
Oh, I see.
I would not ask you because who am I to ask someone who's so developed? Like I would be flagging myself for the inequities or asking you for a favor or taking from you.
Like almost aggressively humble of just like out of respect, but like it almost does you a disservice where you could just be like, hey dude, I love that. And I'd be like, oh sick, let me,
And what I've realized is people will reach back, right? Not everybody.
Yeah.
But definitely reach out. Like it was 2 years ago when I started being very intentional about this. And for me, I never worked for a woman of color. Especially in the creative field, we talked about like the odds are so low. There was a conference called the 3% conference because only 3% of women were creative directors. And that's not even minorities. That's just women.
Are you kidding me?
So out of 100%, only 3% are. That just shows you how little there is for someone that I can model my career after.
In 100 creative directors, there's three women?
Three women. So I don't know what the minority rate with that is, but it is so drastically lower. And for me, I was like, I'm getting to this stage in my life. I want to have kids eventually, but I'm 28 years old. Not 28 anymore, but I was at the time. And I was like, I'm the oldest person that's a woman here. I'm the most senior woman here, and I wasn't senior at all. And I was like, what's next?
Yeah.
What are they going to do with me? Am I like going to have to retire? Are they going to put me on a Huggies account? Like, what's going to happen to
me? And this is the same agency. This is the same one you're
doing. No, this is a different one later down. But I just started reaching out to people I would just see on LinkedIn. I just like saw people's pictures and I would write them a nice personalized email. Like, I loved your work. I see that you're a mom. I see that, you know, you look like me. I haven't worked with anyone that looked like me. Can I just borrow 15 minutes? Can we have a coffee chat?
Amazing.
And surprisingly, I got 4 coffee chats.
Wow.
And it was so amazing. And I still keep in touch with these women 3 years later.
Wow.
And if I can give my advice to my younger self, that's what I would say. Be like, don't be afraid to reach out.
Right.
There's so many amazing people out there that can give you advice, that can jump you forward, that can be lifelong friends, that can really give you that inspiration, that boost to figure out how to navigate what it looks like out there.
That's cool. I guess you could say that that's a little bit of a cliche of advice, but like when you explain it and when you paint that picture of why it's so important, it just hits a little bit different. Like, it hits harder to me because I'm like, yeah, you're right. And I think that, like, I talked to a college not too long ago, and this idea of like, when you're impressed by somebody, when you see somebody that's doing the thing you want to do, like, hit them up. They're not all going to respond to you, but somebody will. And like, it's okay. Like, even if you're not qualified yet, you will be. Like, if you love that thing, get in touch, like, build your network. So I think that that advice is so beautiful. So thank you for that. But you're at the agency, you're doing all these sick PlayStation campaigns. What happens next?
I talked about earlier about how seeing is kind of part of believing. And something that you and I have in common is really speaking at universities, speaking to kind of the upcoming generation about just a career that's a little different than maybe your parents have introduced you to. And when I was at Scheid, I was introduced to a bunch of different kind of things. One of them being Lightbringer Project. It's a nonprofit foundation out of Pasadena, which is local. I started helping. I just started speaking to them when they came in, showing their high school students, their junior high school students, what I was doing. And then when I left the agency, I was like, can we keep in touch? And they're like, yeah, of course, we would love to keep going. And I was like, your website is very bad. Can I help with that? And they're like, you will? I was like, yeah, let me just do it for you.
Yeah.
And that was a friendship that I still have. I would say it's like 15 years later.
Wow.
But it made me realize something interesting about a lot of the students would stay afterwards. Especially women, especially women of color.
Really?
And they'd be like, I've never saw anyone like you talking to us about this stuff.
No way.
And so that idea that I talked to you about, representation, seeing is believing, it really impacted me then because I am not an extrovert. I'm definitely an introvert.
Yeah.
And I felt really compelled to do this work. I felt compelled to show up, to show others that you may not see someone that looks like you there yet, but there are there.
Like, it became bigger than you. Like, in that moment, like, you realized, you're like, oh, this is like, by me being here and showing all these young students, all of a sudden, like, this is so much more than just me. And wow, that's cool.
I was like, if I can give someone just a little bit clarity on where their career can go or their future, I was like, yeah, I'm going to show up for that.
Yeah.
So I started speaking at, you know, within this nonprofit, I gone to a bunch of high schools in the area, as well as then talking at universities.
Yeah.
And I was really fortunate to then, now I'm the adjunct professor at LMU.
No way.
Yeah.
What? Sick.
Thanks. No, I have really great co-teachers. They're the curriculum directors. Shout out to Andy Rum and Matt Steffel, who brought me in.
Shout out.
And I met Matt Steffel when I was on a panel list for him for this nonprofit called Think LA. And we connected afterwards and got lunch. And he was like, have you ever thought about teaching? I was like, well, yes, I have thought about teaching, but don't I need a master's? I don't have one. And he's like, no, not if you have a good idea. Do you have an idea? And I was like, I do. Because, and at this time in my career, I was about 15 years into my career. And I was going to a lot of the colleges and I was looking at portfolios. And I realized a lot of the Los Angeles talent didn't have the makings to get hired in a junior job.
Interesting.
And that kind of saddened me because I know how expensive an art school education is.
Right.
That's a lot of loans. And if you can't get a job right away, it's really despairing.
So it was like a barrier to entry that would like exclude people from having a dream job purely because you don't have the money to play ball to get in for a qualification.
Or you go to the college and the way they prepare you isn't right to get the job.
Really?
And so I was saying, hey, you have an amazing strategy program here at the M School. It's a marketing school. And if you could take some of those strategists and make them creatives, because the best creatives are strategists and the best strategists are a little bit creative.
They can do both.
They can do both.
Yeah.
And you would have the best talent.
Wow.
And he was like, huh, that's interesting. So what would the class be? And I was like, well, there's all these collegiate level briefs where college level students get a real brief from a company and they can compete in this. And so if we make that the syllabus, then we can prove that the school is actually doing a great job because we're bringing in awards. And he was like, oh, curious. That's interesting. Okay, let me think about that. And our lunch ended and I didn't hear from him for about a month. And he came back and he was like, so we just accepted 25 students. You're going to be teaching this course and it's going to be happening starting spring. And I was like, whoa.
No way.
And so that was totally just like a happenstance brainstorming lunch with someone that I was just on a panel with. And now we're in our third year. And last year, our incredibly talented students took home first and second place in the FE's Global Collegiate. So I'm so incredibly proud of this program.
And it works.
And it works.
That alone is so sick because like, I get it. Like you did this from this place of like, you're this introvert, but you go there the first time, you realize that it's helping. You realize that the experiences that you were fortunate enough to have, you can share in a way that gets other people those opportunities where they otherwise wouldn't be able to.
Exactly. I think it's like, you look back at it and you're like, wow, that was really luck, right?
Yeah.
But then right place, right time, and just expressing those things.
But sharing the luck again,
exactly.
Like not being selfish with it. Like not like, yeah, I know I got the sick job, worked on all these campaigns. Like it is nice, you know?
Yeah.
But like taking that and being like, okay, cool. If I had this opportunity and I realized that I could live my dream, there's a lot of other people that maybe don't realize that. Let me share that. I mean, that's so much of what this whole podcast is about, right? Yes. It's like, there's so many people that have a gift that is creative. And I think creativity and being an artist is so much more than being a painter or being a singer or being like your traditional view of an artist. But I think people are so fast to discredit that and think that they need to go do the traditional job or whatever. So the more you can show people like, no, 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 that thing that you love, I promise it's valuable. And you're doing that on such a scale. That's really cool.
And I 100% believe that you don't have to be at the top of your game. You don't have to be an expert to reach back and pull forward.
Mm. As if like someone like yourself, like you could almost not go teach that and share because you could tell yourself like, I'm not X level yet.
Yes.
I don't have this accreditation. Yes, I don't have these awards.
I'm not a C-suite. I'm not this. I'm not that. So who am I? But even if you're just a couple years ahead of someone else, you have so much insight that can really help someone out.
That's cool. That's a really cool perspective to share because oftentimes when I do this podcast, I think about it as like only the person that needs the help or that is on that next step. But how many people that listen to a podcast, this one or any other, maybe could help more as well and don't realize it?
Yes.
Like maybe like just what you said, 3 years ahead of the game, maybe you don't have the accreditations, maybe you don't have the highest title at your job, whatever, but you actually could still give back and share. That's cool to think about as well. I'm curious of your entire journey in a career because again, like where I found you was visibility mindset and Asians in advertising, but I feel like there's actually probably quite a lot before that that gets us there, huh?
I guess just a little bit more. One of my other things I really love is self-improvement. I would say I'm a lifelong learner.
Love.
And I love TED Talks.
Oh, wow.
Love listening to them.
Yes.
I love hearing other people's careers and their journeys and being thought leaders or change makers or just having a random moment of epiphany to just spark my brain, right? To get my synapses going.
Yeah.
And one of those other really lucky things I had in my life, I had someone reach out to me and they were like, I host TEDx in Culver City. Do you want to just come on as your creative? I was like, I don't know what that is, but down to help. I helped out with one event and then they were like, hey, do you want to take it over? And I was like, all right, I'm not a producer. I'm not an event coordinator. But okay, let's see what this looks like. And so that was 2014 and I've hosted 9 events since. And
no way.
And I'll be having my 10th one in June. But we talked earlier about how it's just so wonderful meeting different types of people.
Yeah.
Who just are so inspiring from all different walks of life. And that's what I really kind of gained from that TEDx experience and hosting these events, because it's a labor of love.
Yeah.
It's not money making, generating. It's just giving back to the community.
Yeah.
But having to work with people with speeches, how they curate their talks, what an idea is, how to show it within 18 minutes. It's also led me to some really interesting opportunities, such as I was flown to Reno and did a talk for Neil Strauss, the author of The Game. And I basically taught how to write speeches, how to show up on stage. And it's been a really interesting thing where I'm like, okay, as someone who used to be that person in the room where they're like, you should please speak up, to now teaching other people how to speak up, was kind of an interesting transition in my career. And so that was kind of like the next step from that was kind of in parallel to everything else. So I was doing my creative career, I was doing the TED Talks, and then I was also kind of doing my speaking within schools.
I'm blown away by this. I have two questions again right there. One, do you think, like, as I'm hearing your story unfold, I feel like there's this level in your life of saying yes to things that make you a little bit uncomfortable. Like you're like, I don't know, I don't produce events, but like, I gotta see what's up here. Is that, am I right to assume
100%.
That? Where does that come from? Because I think that that's a really beautiful thing to do, but it's scary.
It's super scary. And I am not a thrill seeker. Like, I've done, it's interesting because I say I'm not a thrill seeker, but yet I skydived. Like, I don't watch scary movies. Mm-hmm. If I don't have to go on a roller coaster, I won't have to. Like, it's not my thing to be a thrill seeker. Right. But leaning into the uncomfortable to challenge myself for some reason is actually very interesting to me. So
I feel similar.
Yeah. I am not a public speaker. I'm not a person like stage. I have zero rhythm. Like, I took an opera singing class where I had to sing on stage. I am not athletic, but I saw someone that did an Ironman and I was like, I can do an Ironman. I just have to put my thoughts to it. And I did it. And I do these things where I'm just like, I could see the value for it.
Yeah.
Or it's like just uncomfortable enough that it's interesting.
Leaning into that discomfort, I think it teaches you. Like, when you genuinely address, like, this is uncomfortable to me. Yeah. This is scary to me. But proving over and over to yourself that you can do it.
Exactly.
Gives you a level of confidence. And it's like, I think in a weird way, it's good to seek discomfort.
Yeah.
And it seems like you do that.
As long as it's within reason. If someone says, there's times where people are like, oh, you could never do that. And I'm like, all right, I'll show you.
Yeah. And I think that there's a healthy balance too. Like, of course, most of the things that make you uncomfortable and what we're talking about are things that ultimately are good and healthy and progressive at the end, right?
Yeah.
Like, by doing an Ironman, you're probably going to get yourself in better physical shape. By conquering public speaking, like, these things aren't putting your life at risk. It's just scary. Like, it's like the internal scaries. Or I guess physically draining, but makes you physically better. You lean into a lot of that. And the TED Talk, TEDx was very much a part of that, of like, okay, I'll go do this. And then I'll also figure out how to produce events and put this together kind of thing.
I was like, I get so much value. Like, it's so draining to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You're definitely a lot better at this than I am.
No, but like, you're right. That's actually a really interesting point, because a friend of mine, very close friend of mine, did her first ever podcast. And afterwards she's like, I don't know how you do this. Like, my batteries are gone after. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's real. Like, I love every second of this, but it's a different kind of energy to be 100%. On and engaged. And it's interesting.
But it's that moment where the event ends and that people are in the room together and they want to meet the speakers and they start talking and they start spreading ideas, exchanging numbers, even though I'm like there with my garbage bag and I'm cleaning up and trying to watch out for everything. That's the part that keeps me coming back. Because I'm like, there's community here. There's ideas being spread here.
Yeah.
Like, these events are helping to open people's minds.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep coming back to do more. It's like that sense of, sometimes you listen to the TED Talks on YouTube and you're on a podcast, but you don't get that room of people.
I've never been to one. That's incredible.
My
next question was like, I think for me, discovering TED Talks was somewhere around like learning like NPR and podcasts, of just like, oh, whoa, like if I want to, like in a commute or at the gym or any amount of downtime, like I can listen to insightful conversation.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how, I was probably like early mid 20s when I found that. And I was like, this is incredible. I honestly have to admit, I don't know the difference and I don't know how it works of like TEDx and how that, like, yeah. Can a person just go to that?
Yeah.
Like, how does this work? Explain this.
So TED, uh-huh. or TED.com is kind of the umbrella. So uh-huh. that is the major corporation. And then they host their very nice talks with like Malala that costs, I think the lowest entry is like 5,000 ticket, but those are really limited. And then I think they go upwards from there up to, I think, even sponsorship level. I'm sure there's a pretty high ceiling there.
Crazy.
But then they have independent organizers. So that's where the X comes in.
Got it.
And so for me, that's applying. Mm-hmm. And that's a very lengthy license process. I have to apply every single time and renew my license.
No way.
It usually has a bunch of kickbacks where I try to fix it and like massage it. And then it finally gets approved and I can
host
it.
And what is the license?
It's to host the event.
So like it's an independent license through TED that qualifies people and vets people and says like you have all the, okay, got it.
So, hey, you understand the rules. Hey, we like the people you bring in. This license is clear. So TEDx Culver City is yours.
Cool.
For the next one event.
Wow. So then as a public, like, cause like legitimately again, like
you can come, you can buy a ticket and come to the event. It's up to me to find great speakers. I try to find people that are all different disciplines. I don't want you to come to this event and go, there was four to five speakers and none of them resonated with me. I learned nothing. That would be my biggest fear, right? I want you to go to and be like, I learned something from each and every one of them, even though they're all wildly different.
Wow, different walks of life, different opinions, different insights to share.
Different types of people.
And you're curating that.
Yes, different types of careers. And so every time I try to curate a different group of people, all super dynamic, bringing great speeches. And so that you leave or you finish that talk and you're like, I want to network with everyone in this room.
You're doing this in June?
I'm doing this in June.
I'm absolutely coming. That's incredible. Wow. And can like a listener that's listening to this, like do TEDx talks like this happen everywhere in the world?
You can go to the website, you can find your local chapter.
We're accidentally doing a TEDx ad right here.
Yeah, totally. you can go to the website, you can find your city, I think you search by zip code and then you can find them. You can find where the local one is. They're happening all the time in so many major cities. And so even if you want to speak for one, if that's in your goal set, you can actually reach out to them and be like, well, when's the next time you're looking for a speaker? I always tell people you have a much better chance if you already have a speech written.
Wow.
So if you know your topic, mm-hmm. if you can write the speech, if you better yet record your speech, just send it to them.
Wow.
So you can be like, hey, I don't know if you're considering yet, but.
And they're what? You said 16 minutes?
Up to 18.
Up to 18.
So you're going to be as low as 5 to 18, but 18 is your cap.
Wow.
And so I say, just try it out.
That's so cool. I had one guest on that had done I think it was a TEDx talk.
Yes.
And it was so beautiful to me that she had done that. I thought it was so cool. And like now learning about it more, I'm like, whoa, that's sick.
Well,
so
you can do a talk. Anyone listening can do a talk.
Really?
If you have something to say and you know how to say it.
Wow.
Definitely.
That's really cool. So like, what a beautiful concept. So like the TED Talks, the ones that everybody knows, the huge ones, that is like bigger scale, whatever. But then among like TEDx is communities and it's people that you get a license. So you're representing the TED brand and you're putting together this, you know that you'll get something, what feels like a TED Talk out of it. But then amongst communities, these all exist and people can share these things.
And I always give the example, look at Brené Brown. She did a TEDx talk. She didn't do a TED.com talk. She did a TEDx talk. I think it was like TEDx Houston. And we all know who Brené Brown is.
Yeah. Damn.
She's her own show now, right?
Damn.
She has so many books. Like, and it could just be from the small TEDx stage. Like, she eventually did a TED big stage.
Right.
And so that's a way to get noticed by that as well. If you're not already a Bill Gates or a Malala, right?
Right.
You can get noticed from these TEDx stages.
That's beautiful. That's what a cool thing. That's, and it's just so in line with your brand too, of like, it's like this discomfort of you're like, I don't know about this, but like, it just, it feels like something that applies and it feels like it's the right thing. And you did it throughout all of your, I guess, philanthropic work or like community-based work, helping people. How was the progression of your career? Like, were you staying in advertising or marketing as well? And what did that look like for you? Was it hard to balance the two? Did you go to different agencies? Like, just as I am so fascinated by like career journeys as well.
It all really helped. all at the same time. And I say this because I talked about representation in the rooms and I talked about kind of being always the minority, whether it's being a woman of color, now I'm a mother. So I am one of one.
Yeah.
And I think all this stuff, because being an introvert, being someone that doesn't lean into asking for help, I didn't know what to do. I was in these rooms and I felt like I was really insulated with just what was happening. And thankfully, me going to these schools, talking to TED speakers, it kind of brought me outside of my bubble. So I knew there was more to just what was in these walls. I knew I had to look at the room that I was in a little differently and my career path a little differently.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I see happy hours happening where I'm not invited to.
Oh.
I see that maybe those happy hours are leaning into assignments that are higher visibility for certain people.
No way.
Not more accomplished people, just those people that are going to those things.
Interesting. And the politics.
The politics, too, right? And as a creative, you're only as good as the product you produce. And not all briefs are the same. So what I mean by that is, there's different levels of projects, right? There's higher visibility and low visibility. Higher visibility means there's more money. There's big production dollars, celebrity talent, licensed music. You get more of a staff. And then there's these things that are like kind of like sheepy, but we have to do it kind of stuff.
Sure.
If you're not getting those, you're getting these. And I call these non-promotable tasks. They're usually time consuming, super busy. So you're working weekends, nights, which doesn't free you up to do those things.
You get stuck in it.
You get stuck in it.
I see.
And so this idea of my next lesson to my younger self would be learn to say no. Learn to see what's there, what is happening, and be like, hey, if you just work, because I was told to be a good worker,
like,
right? Say yes to those things.
Get shit done. Yeah.
And say yes. Be like, it's not beneath me. I will accept that project. What I was realizing that people that were actually beneath me would say no. So they were going to me. And then those people were getting those opportunities.
Interesting.
So I say, just by doing a good job, your daily job just grants you more work, not the better work. So if you're not getting into those rooms, if you're not going to happy hours, how do you get these projects? And so that's where kind of a lot of stuff that I'm doing now really came into play, and that's to be visible. So how can I be visible in a room that you would think by being different would make me more visible, but actually makes me less visible?
Right.
Because no one's talking to me. No one's looking to me.
Yeah. You're just the person that's like getting the boring stuff done behind the scenes.
Or
they're a great worker or whatever, but like you're not being considered like this.
And I also say there's times when you go into a room and it's not really warmed up for people that are othered.
Interesting.
So if I go into a room and they're like talking about, I'll make a very generalization here, sports.
Yeah.
And I'll go to the room where they're talking about 60s glam rock. My parents aren't even from this country. So I don't have that musical culture from that time period.
Right.
And so I'll go to a room and they'll be talking some niche, like nuances, and they're all in this jam session. No one's noticing that I'm getting left out of this conversation.
Right.
And so when they start coming into the room with a pitch and I'm there with them, I'm not warmed up in the room. No one's like looking at me going, oh, let's have her talk now.
You're that little bit less familiar.
I'm a little less familiar even before the brief. This is just like a side conversation.
Well, that, and I mean, I like to take that a step further, great example, but it's like you were telling me that stat. So it's like 3 in 100 women like in these positions.
Yes.
So then it's like, because I'm like, I don't know a thing about sports. So like, I feel you on that of like the traditionals of like, if you're in a room trying to network and a bunch of people are like, did you see the Super Bowl score?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't.
And I have a great friend and he's a white guy and he doesn't know sports either. But because of the way he looks, they'll put him on it.
Right. Or I'll have a bunch of dudes assume that I care about sports or like something. So like I can, I picture
but
it
no
as much
one
as I'm not.
I would know.
Right. So as much as like I relate to you on like some of those things, I probably am still getting the benefit of the doubt of just like, oh yeah, like you look the same as most people here. Tall, regular white guy.
So and, you probably know.
Right. So, you're getting left out on all these things, even when you're going above and beyond, even when you're leaning into discomfort, even when you're going to those networking things, you're kind of just being left out because of like societal, like, I don't know, just like people not connecting.
So I always say, like, you go into those rooms and you set the precedence. Whoa. So I can go into the room and be like, this is a great brief. I've worked on 4 sports campaigns. Oh, I worked with a sports team before. Oh, I know this. Oh, I did an Ironman. That could be helpful here. Like, I will.
You have to so vocally share.
Yeah. And I'm not doing it to just brag. I'm doing it to show that I have credibility because there is a bias that I will not know. And so I always say, if you can state those things, if you can like volunteer those things, at least it'll break those perceptions a little bit. I do this other thing where I go into a room and, you know, I kind of look up to find ways to connect with people that I know are in there, especially clients. I'm like, oh, do we have a friend in common? Do we work at the same agency together? Are we from the same city? So when I go into the room, even though they can look at me and go, oh, she must be a lower creative, or she must be the note taker. She can't possibly be a creative on this project or the creative lead. I can go in there and at least be a friend and be authentic. I don't have to go in there and be like, oh yeah, I get sports and muddle my way through it, or I get glam rock. Right. I can find a way to be like, oh, I saw that, you know, you'd worked on this project.
Yeah.
And we could talk on a real authentic connection level versus having to fake through it.
That's really interesting, because it's like, you know what I actually love and respect about what you're saying there though, is you're not being the victim. Like, you're not saying like, this sucks. Like, you don't know what it's like to be me. Like, you're just saying, this is an isness. I'm aware of it.
Yes.
Here's what I've done to get around it. And I think that's sick, because it's like, people might not realize that. And like, some people might be malicious and just assholes, but some people might like genuinely not realize 100%. How much is happening that like these things, like, we don't even recognize.
Yes.
So you're just saying, I found a cheat code, or here's what I can do to be above that and not get stuck in that.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I think that's gotta be helpful for so many people that feel the same way.
I hope so.
Yeah. And is that a lot of what the book is about?
Yeah. So the book, I co-wrote it with Jesslyn Lamb. She's the VP of DEI at Digitas Health. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to have someone that can actually do the real talking. And I'm just assuming these things are working, but she can actually know what it is in more principles section.
Oh, cool.
And what's really nice is I'm a very creative minded person. I kind of think it makes me see a lot more sparkly objects and bounce a little bit more. Mm-hmm. She's a lot more regimented.
Yeah.
And she can put me on
a good balance of the two.
She's totally like, we're totally great balances of each other. And I couldn't ask for a better co-founder / co-author. And the book is basically, you know, they're broken out to thirds. The first one's about how you can work on yourself. Mm-hmm. The second one is how you can work with others, and then how you can change the world ahead.
Sick.
And so
sick.
Yeah. And I say this book is for everyone, because it's really for anyone that wants to be seen and they don't feel seen.
Yeah.
But the book itself is really catered toward Asians Americans, because we have stats to say why it's so important.
Yeah.
But the tricks that we have are there, or teaches that we have in there, are really for anybody.
Well, I think that's beautiful, because I was doing a little bit of my homework on you, and I was listening to an episode, an interview that you did on another podcast, and you were talking about Asians in advertising and how you had started the group, and it like the engagement, or how many people joined so quickly, was absolutely overwhelming and exciting. And it's like, am I an Asian in advertising? No. But do I know the feeling of feeling like I don't fit in and feeling like I'm not understood? Yes. And I think everybody does. So again, it's like, that's not who I am. And yet, like, I'm like, I need to read this book right now. And like, it's like, I get it. Like, it's bigger than that. It's just helping people be seen. It's helping people break out of their shell. Like, it's so much bigger than that. Yet it's so admirable to specifically plant a flag in the ground and say, hey, this is for you. Because you can firsthand be like, I know what this is like.
Well, when we were reached out about this book by Wiley, our publisher, First, I forwarded this to my co-founder, and she was like, are we getting catfish? Like, is this for real? Like, why would anyone think we can write a book? We took the call and we're like, whoa, this is real. We're going to write a book. And what really amazed us was our acquisitions editor, Victoria, super sweet. She was like, there isn't a book out there like this.
Really?
She's like, I've seen these for other groups of people, but not Asians. And I was like, how's that possible? And we did our research and we're like, we do need this.
No way.
Because no one's really addressed this.
Really?
And so to know that we're the first book that really talks about this bamboo ceiling or this double pane ceiling is really interesting to us.
Yeah, that's wild. And I mean, again, I don't have firsthand experience on it, but like, that's cool that you are doing something for your community where you can firsthand speak to it. And you're just like, yo, like what? How is this not here? Like,
yes.
That's wild. What was like the purpose? What do you see commonly? Like what things do you want to break? And like, what are you noticing in society that's just like needs to change?
Well, first, I think there's those stereotypes. Mm-hmm. What you look at the Asian American community, especially as a couple of different things, right? You have the model minority stereotype, mm-hmm. which means that all Asians are successful in America, which mm-hmm. is a very dated sentiment mm-hmm. that was curated by a white man who was writing an article about talking about how Japanese people from the internment camps are now successful, which crazy. They aren't. They just were able to kind of rebuild their lives after being completely devastated.
Yeah.
And this term was really to go against the Black movement, the really? Civil rights movement, to really disparage like, oh, like these change makers, these people that want to fundamentally change things for the better for all of us. Hey, don't be these people that are loud. Like, be like these quiet Asian people who are being successful by putting their heads down and working hard.
Whoa.
And that's where the term came from.
Whoa.
And it really was such a divisive movement. But to my parents who came to this country, they're like, oh, we're the model minority. It's a good thing.
Interesting.
And it was kind of like this weird brainwash thing that happened.
And then that gets instilled into the kids and all of that of and just it, like, keep your head down, work hard, kind yes. of whatever.
And same to managers. They see all their employees and they're like, oh, that Asian, they're not struggling.
No
Because
way.
Their community is fine. And that also goes into like governmental resources. So you get communities like New York.
Yeah.
And the poorest people there ethnically are Asians by 29.8%. And so you're saying those people don't need subsidies. Those people don't need housing. Those people like, so because you're like, those people are fine.
Off of like literally just assumption, just of just like stereotypes assumption. And assumption.
100%.
That's insane.
And so what we do in this book, and that I think is the most helpful, is to lay the groundwork for this.
Mm.
Because a lot of people haven't learned this yet. So whether that's my Asian parents, my husband's white parents, like you don't know what you don't know.
Totally.
So really breaking the data in there and setting the foundation of why this work is important for the community is so incredibly important. Because we want to open your eyes. We want to take the wool off.
Yeah.
And really just have you have a clear understanding of what's happening.
Yeah.
Because I also always quote the Harvard Business Review where they say Asian Americans are least likely to be promoted to managers. And you would think again, oh, why would that be possible?
Right.
They're so well educated. They're so well paid. They're at the top of their game. But we're not.
That's crazy.
And so you have to really accept those things. And then you're like, you're right. I don't work for someone that looks like me.
Right.
There isn't that much representation. I don't see it in media. And you can start unwinding what you thought you knew to then go, oh, now I see what's happening to me in my career and how I can advocate for myself or for the other person in the room.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's it's a wild thing to talk about and think about is like, I just think that anybody can relate to that of just being misunderstood, stereotyped, assume something of them. But to take a second and specifically, you know, for yourself, for what you can speak to firsthand, to do something about it and to share and to educate is incredible. Cause it's like, I wouldn't know this, right? Like,
yes.
And it's not me trying to be ignorant or hateful at all, but it's just like people don't know what they don't know.
100%.
That's crazy. And I would imagine like it's probably really empowering because again, like you started this whole community, right? Asians in advertising, and it's probably very empowering to break these stereotypes and these molds, huh?
I do always try to reach back. So when people message me on LinkedIn or slide into my Instagram and asking to like meet up, to have coffee dates or just like get a phone call, I'm always trying to do that. And I'm also trying to tell other people to do that. So within my own Asians in advertising community, we have scholarship programs. So
no way.
Again, I don't take anything out. Everything we put back in.
No
we
way.
Are really grateful to have people that sponsor us, corporations, but we've created a bunch of different scholarships. So we have a creative scholarship. So helping you get your portfolio done, package you up so you can get hired. We also have a leaders scholarship where you can work with an AAPI coach who really works through confidence, through presentation, like so you can get level up because if you're not getting paid well, you're probably not getting a coach.
Right. It stacks. Like it's crazy how much. It's like, okay, well, if you don't have this, then you don't have this and you don't have this resource open. And it's like, who's to say these are incredible people anywhere out there that would be the best leaders that just don't even have the chance to show that?
So we try to make sure we give you constantly room to ladder up, to really make those connections, to grow who you are, yeah. and then also bring it back. So yeah. we have a mentorship program. We actually work with another nonprofit called 3EF.
Cool.
And we pair mentors and mentees. Mm-hmm. And last year we did 60 pairings. We had like over 400 signups.
Wow.
And so just because of logistics and being really hard to run, we did 60.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue that year after year. So always trying to give more value, put back into the community, and really show that there's hope out there for you.
Yeah. There's so many levels as you're explaining this that I respect and that I love. I think like something else that I think about is clearly you've had a taste of what it's like to be successful in advertising and in your career. And something that I know just from doing this podcast is like, it's an incredible amount of time that goes into something that doesn't really make you any money. And I can't help but think about everything you're doing here. And it's like so powerful and so exciting. But that's a lot of time of giving back. And like, I don't really think that there's dollars and cents tied to that. Like, I think that that's something that you're just doing because you care. And that's, again, a level where I'm like, I really, really respect that. Because we were even talking right before this started of like the challenges of doing what you love, not compromising your integrity, not working in places where you're not appreciated, and giving yourself that room to grow professionally. Yes. So you're constantly doing that and you're keeping all of this going. Like that's an undertaking.
Thanks. Yeah. I feel like the work I do outside of work brings me so much joy. And
yeah.
I would love to find a place where I can marry the two a little bit better. It doesn't have to make as much money, mm-hmm. but if I could figure out a way to just put more of myself or my whole self into one thing.
Yeah.
I would love that. That would be the dream.
I feel like though, like to me again, it's like, it's such a no-brainer. It's like yes. The world needs you. Like, yes, do it. Like they're like with that much goodwill, with that much positivity and like bringing community together, it's like there needs to be a fund, a scholarship, a something for the Bernice to like everyone. Can we just have like a Patreon of like, let Bernice do everything she is meant to do. Don't worry about anything else. It's really cool to talk about all of this and just in any way to share your story, I hope, amongst my audience, just to continue to like build and grow. Like,
thank you.
I really love what you're doing and hearing your whole story. I only scratched the surface and it was just the like, I think you're doing something cool. Come do the podcast. And now like I'm sitting here and I'm so inspired by what you're doing. I think it's so sick.
Thanks. Well, check out the book. Also, I'm working on some kind of course to go with it.
Yeah.
Just so people can also learn these skills.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how can people find you? How can people support? Tell me, like, everything. Oh, there we go.
Visit me at BerniceChow.com. Also, if you want to check out the book, it's The Visibility Mindset. It's everywhere if you want to buy it at Amazon or support your local bookstore.
Yeah. Did you do an audiobook of it?
I did.
Yeah?
So it's on Audible.
Did you read it?
No, I did not.
Oh, word. I've thought about that of like, that's got to be so crazy. Knowing what it takes to record a podcast or record a whole audiobook.
I think had I really thought about it, maybe I would have.
Can you retroactively do it?
Maybe. My imposter syndrome rose up when they asked me if I would read it.
Whoa.
Because we talk about leaning into that comfortableness.
Yeah.
I would have told you 6 years ago, I am not a public speaker and I'm not a writer. Now I'm a lot more of both.
Yeah.
And so when they asked me to record this book, I was like, no, you can have a professional reader do it.
Oh,
but now I'm thinking about it, I was like, oh, that would have been so cool to sit in the sessions, whatever. Even if it was hard, if I messed up my S's, just
whatever,
give it a try.
Yeah.
Just, when am I ever going to do that again?
Like maybe you have to write another book.
Maybe I'll just have to read it and just put it out.
Who knows?
Maybe I'll just read it for
you. Oh, that'd be kind of tight.
Yeah, why not?
That's content. That's your book.
Right.
You could do that and you could do chapters and then explain chapters.
Oh, I love this. Thought storming.
What about your podcast? That's pretty, how fresh is that?
We're on season 2.
Okay.
It's called Asians in Advertising, just like the nonprofit.
Yep.
You can find it everywhere you can find podcasts. We're just wrapped season 2. I had way more dedication like you do. We only do about 10 to 12 episodes a season. So we're going to start again in the fall, but definitely catch up on all the episodes. We have so many great, amazing guests, including the CMO of Sprinkles, which is Michelle Wong, one of my good friends, and her episode's terrific. But there's a lot of good content in there.
I think Seasons is maybe smarter. I'm jealous of Seasons. Do you break it down? Like, do you say, like, we're tackling this subject for these seasons and then get people that speak to that? Or how do you do your seasons?
So Seasons is just based on number of episodes and my personal bandwidth.
Got it.
We kind of just, we want to keep it fresh. So mm-hmm. we just have people that we find are good guests. Mm-hmm. And each episode is really structured. So we want to know, because you came to this episode because you're somewhat related in this field. So mm-hmm. first chapter we talk about in the episode is your career background. Mm-hmm. The second chapter is your identity. Mm. And the third is paying it forward.
Whoa.
So that's kind of how we structure every episode. And my TED background also makes me a little attention deficit. So I'm like, it has to be within 20 minutes.
Wow. That's really good. I need to like learn from you on that, because this podcast was like, our episode is like my favorite version of an episode. Like, you shared your story so well. We talked about all the things I wanted to talk about. Mine is not that structured, and I couldn't tell a guest that that's what I'm looking for. You just happen to be a natural. So I could learn a thing or two from you on how to like structure that. But that's cool.
I also don't want anyone to get bored. Mm. Like, just make it super easy to follow. And you get right into the meat.
Yep.
And I always want to find that moment where you get to know the person, just like this episode or just like your episodes. It's like, you want to get to that moment where you're like, oh, I connect with this person. This person and me will be friends.
Yes. Yes. That's always like what I say and like what I look for in those episodes is I always say like, where was the moment where you found your thing? Like that whatever that spark was, whatever like you got out of school or the moment where you're like, I'm a little bit different, or I see this, I really care about this. I think you have that on lock as well.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this.
No, thanks for having me.
This was really, really cool. This is an episode that I'm so happy. Like, again, like it's one of those things, like we didn't know each other and I made a new friend and I'm so happy about it. And I'm so proud to have this episode done and to share your story.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here. Thanks for inviting me into your home. This was really fun.
Incredible. Thank you.